Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup. My name is Marty Bennett, your host and president of SMIE Consulting. And today we're going to be covering three topics that have popped across our news feeds in the last few days. And we'll talk especially about the new White House meeting last Friday that was broke by Karen Fisher last week from the Chronicle of Higher Ed. We'll just spend some time looking at what happened on that fateful meeting, what little we know that's come out of it. So we'll share with what we know. We'll also take a look at a related topic to this White House meeting, which was revolved around international students and work opportunities, particularly OPT and STEM OPT. Those were some of the topics discussed. So we'll talk about a recent study that came up about the same time last week related to the effect of international students on U.S. jobs, particularly those that are in STEM or OPT fields, STEM OPT fields. And finally, we'll look at lessons learned from my third installment in a series for IDP Connect on how international admissions responds to crises. This week, we'll look at the post 2016 elections and how that changed the way that U.S. institutions did international admissions. And we'll talk about some of those things and more in today's hour chat. And thank you, Lou, my ever faithful friend, for joining this chat. Glad you made it today. Obviously, Facebook down yesterday was a big scandal, and people all over the world on Facebook and Instagram were running to Twitter to find out what was going on in the world because they had no idea. So glad you're all able to make it today. So thank you for joining me, Lou. And wanted to share for those who are watching on YouTube or on the archives of this session on Facebook that all of the stories that I cover, with the exception of this news story on the White House meeting that happened last Friday related to international education, all of the news stories that we cover this week are found in our newsletter, the SMIE Consulting e-newsletter. That's called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. So I've just posted the link to that in the comments section on the Facebook page. And I always encourage you to go to Facebook or smieconsulting.com and or .org, and you can find the links to subscribe to that newsletter if you don't want to click on this one in particular. So for those who are listening on the podcast, thank you. Always good to have those who prefer not to see me and just hear me. And I don't know if that's an advantage or not, but thank you for listening on the podcast too. And I've put up the links on the video for the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup podcast, available on all your favorite podcast providers, as well as our website information. So as we go through today with these three stories, we'll post the links to each of those on the Facebook comment section. But do pay attention to that and head back to Facebook if you are looking for any information to any of the stories that we are talking about today. First up, the Inside Higher Ed news story, and put the link out on what was discussed in this surprise meeting. A lot of international educators Thursday evening. Karen Fisher of the Chronicle put out a tweet indicating that this big meeting was happening on Friday. U.S. Higher Ed universities were invited, as well as corporate leaders, to discuss students and work in the United States. So a lot of friends in the field were, Lou, we'll definitely talk about that college admission scam, not only this week, but probably next week as well. Certainly that's a real juicy topic that's going to be with us for a while, I'm afraid. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But in terms of the White House meeting, this was a lot of people were a little bit scared as to what was going to happen when the news first came out Thursday that this meeting was happening on Friday. Kind of snuck up on a lot of people, and until I saw the tweet from Karen Fisher, I didn't know it was happening. So this article I just shared with you from March 11th comes actually this from, I think it's, what was the 11th? That was must have been, that was Monday. So out of Inside Higher Ed. So This is certainly didn't make the newsletter this past week because it happened after I'd already assembled all the stories. But the discussion focused, frankly, on and from all accounts from the higher ed folks who attended, seemed to be a very cordial and open and friendly discussion about international students, their importance to institutions, but also the work that they do through OPT, either STEM or regular OPT, after they graduate. And that has raised a lot of eyebrows. I'm like, wait a minute, could this be something positive coming out of this White House? And the early signs are yes. Obviously, nothing's been done yet. There's no new executive orders that are expelling certain student groups. That's certainly not going to happen, at least as a result of this meeting. And the comments in particular that were a little bit not startling but surprising, certainly. One was, we could not have asked for a more open and welcoming discussion, one participant said. The whole tone of the meeting was positive and constructive. Can you imagine 2 years ago saying that about a conversation on about international ed with this administration? So really, I'm cautiously optimistic about that meeting, and frankly, the reality of where this president's motivations come from in terms of American jobs, that's certainly priority one for him, and he's made that clear since his inauguration and certainly in the campaign before that. But I think the tone of it certainly suggests that the White House is open to what they call more skilled immigration regulations. There's been things, proposals tossed about, none have ever seen the light of day yet. But things like put a green card attached to every PhD we give to international students, because those are the students that we want to stay in this country, at least the highly skilled ones. So that may be one of the outcomes of this, something like that, move towards away from a lottery-based immigration system to a skills-based immigration system. So that certainly would be a significant departure for the United States in terms of immigration policy, if and when that ever happens, who knows. But there's, interestingly, related to this meeting, there was a report released last week from the National Foundation for American Policy, and that study might have also been one of the prompts for this meeting to get the institutional perspective on it. There were three main conclusions that came out of this meeting, and I'll share those with you in just a minute. But want to put up the link to that story, because it is directly related to the meetings at the White House. The headline from this Forbes article was an economist saying that that foreign students do not cost U.S. workers their jobs, which would be obviously music to this administration's ears, and certainly to those that value what international students bring to this country and feelings that what they do is under threat with this administration. Certainly, this article, the Forbes article, the conclusions that it draws, I think are very, certainly will give at least the administration, hopefully some cover, if we wouldn't call that cover, that we would say this is absolutely exactly what international students do and do not do. The three findings were, there's no evidence, and I'm quoting from the article, there's no evidence that foreign students participating in the OPT program reduce job opportunities for U.S. workers. Instead, the evidence suggests that U.S. employers are more likely to turn to foreign student workers when U.S. workers are scarcer. And we all know that in STEM fields in the United States, those degree programs are flooded with international students because, frankly, there aren't the U.S. domestic students to fill those places in graduate programs. Even maybe that's changing a little bit at the undergraduate level, but certainly on the grad side, the numbers just aren't there to support a claim that they're displacing U.S. workers. And anyone who's done H-1B petitions knows that the work you have to go through to hoops you have to jump through to document the job was available for U.S. workers, none applied, or clearly those that applied were not of the same quality or caliber of the student who ended up getting that or an H-1B position. So that's a lot of there's built-in safeguards in the system already, frankly, to prevent this what they the administration might see as an abuse. The second finding is also important. The relative number of foreign students approved for OPT is negatively related to various measures of the unemployment rate among U.S. STEM workers. A large number of foreign students approved for OPT relative to the number of U.S. workers is associated with a lower unemployment rate among those U.S. workers. So the third point, analysis of the data shows unemployment rates are lower in areas with large numbers of foreign students doing OPT as a share of workers in STEM occupations. Comparisons at the state level likewise show a negative relationship. So thankfully, some evidence that we can hang our hats on as international educators when we get confronted with the issue of, well, are these are international students taking U.S. jobs? And that's has been the mantra for those that have in the administration that have been supporting more restrictive policies towards international students. But hopefully this will be shed some much needed light into the administration's policy wise on what is and is not a reality. And hopefully that can form the foundation of something actually constructive for international education in the U.S. So fingers crossed, not going to hold my breath on that one, but certainly initial signs are positive from the meeting. So, and some of the data that supports the conclusions that we all know as international educators. The final of the scheduled topics, and I will certainly get to the admissions scandal that's ripping through our industry, and certainly domestic admissions industry the last 2-3 days, is my third installment of a series on lessons learned, where initially in the first two parts, we looked at what was happening in the U.S. post 9/11 with U.S. institutions and how they responded to obviously, this was also a time when SEVIS was first introduced, accelerated timeline from when it was supposed to be introduced to track international students in the United States and to produce their documents. So the first two parts looked at how institutions reacted initially to the needs of the students on a campus and how they kind of shifted gears in their recruitment strategies on how to improve what they were doing and to make themselves more impactful in the global an increasingly global competitive market where at that time the U.S. was at a disadvantage post 9/11. This part three of four was introduced last week, went live last week, and this one focuses on how the other seismic event in the last 25 years in international admission circles is most clearly the 2016 elections. And this part three article looks at two of the four rubrics we looked at in terms of where most U.S. institutions found success post 9/11 in adapting the way they did things to improve their international enrollment strategy. That we looked in this article at lesson one and two. First was adapt to challenging circumstances through diversifying markets, and the second was adjusting messages and methods of communicating with prospective international students. And what that has meant is frankly students that institutions realized that after the elections in 2016, they needed to be more proactive. They needed to be looking beyond markets that they previously might have not had considered, or beyond the traditional markets, I should say, that had sustained them, from China, from Saudi Arabia, and other places that had scholarship programs, Brazil, as another example. So what happened with this particular program in the days and weeks after 9/11, in the 2016 elections, you saw a lot of institutions looking at, okay, if we're, the administration is, the rhetoric is certainly out there. The travel bans are out there that are, at the time, were focusing on Muslim majority countries. And that seems to be where there would be the greatest impact. So they maybe turn their attention away from some recruitment efforts in the Middle East, even though the majority of the countries, aside from Iran, in that initial travel ban, and Iraq, were not major centers to the United States. Iraq was removed from the second and third travel ban iterations. But Iran is still on the list, and that's obviously one of the main enemies of the current administration, but yet they still provide quite a few tens of thousands of students to the United States every year. So what happened in this adaptation period, that the universities looked at other markets, certainly Vietnam rose up the list. India had been and still is a consistent number two on the list. But there were other potential markets within India, perhaps on the undergraduate recruitment side, that became much more attractive. There were other markets in Latin America, even Brazil, even though the scientific mobility program was no longer in operation, there were other opportunities to recruit there. And I've had colleagues at other institutions that have shared that they focused on completely tertiary and secondary and tertiary markets that are off the radar for most institutions. Looking at Maryville University, which I featured in the article, looking at how they reached out to Russia, former Soviet republics, African countries, that they found particular traction there. Why? One of the reasonings is they were the world less traveled, but they were also countries that were perhaps used to more crazy leaders in their country, if you want to put it that way, that they're used to dictators as we might think we have it here in the U.S. in some circles, but certainly more authoritarian leadership styles and leaders that speak off the cuff all the time and let their mouth run away with spouting policy ideas and then being taken seriously or not. People in those countries are more attuned to the kind of leadership style we've had the last 3 years here in the U.S., so they perhaps are more amenable and just ignore it. So perhaps the current administration is not as big a turnoff for everybody outside the U.S. In some countries, it's not a turn-on, but certainly not a factor that would completely eliminate the U.S. From consideration for students. So we've seen some of that happening and seeing traction in that area. We've seen the changing of methods and messages. We talked about You Are Welcome Here many times on this podcast, and certainly the foundations of You Are Welcome Here are in what happened with the elections, that the U.S. and institutions needed to present a more welcoming face to the United States than our administration was doing. So what happened with the changing of methods, it also impacted not just messaging to students and parents, but also how you talk to parents and students, what methods you used, and in the admissions process, were you simplifying your messaging? Were you simplifying the method of how students could be connecting with you and applying to you and removing barriers? We saw the rise of pathway programs that were already underway, frankly, in the late 2000s and early 2010s, but we saw those taking prominence. That were making it easier for an international student to come to the United States. And we've got some great examples in the article. Certainly encourage you to check those out and see if that's truly you can see reflections of that in what your institution has done or not done, and maybe pick up some ideas for what you might be able to do. There are examples in the article on changes in admissions policies, on how you recognize certain credentials for secondary school completion credentials. There's also changes in what you used for English language proficiency. So there's some great ideas that colleagues at UIC, Mizzou, have used successfully to help improve their traction in certain countries. So definitely check out the article, and I think you'll find some very useful tips there as we move forward. In part four this month, we'll be covering the third and fourth parts of lessons learned from 9/11 that institutions are applying successfully to post-election international admissions strategies. Now, the elephant in the room for everybody in domestic admissions. Colleagues around the country have been getting emails and calls this past few days, particularly if they're at selective institutions. It's like, what is going on here? These Hollywood actresses are paying to have their sons and daughters admitted to programs that they wouldn't normally be admissible to, and this is all of a sudden a huge scandal. I've seen a couple articles, one of which I'll cover next week. It's just a great reflection on what's actually happening and how it compares to what goes on internationally. And I think, Lou, you can certainly back me up on this one. The scandals that are currently happening are in domestic admissions. Certainly, it's the largest college admission scandal ever in the United States. Certainly, there are the ways in that these students were admitted. Anyone who's worked in admissions for any length of time and has a position in an admissions office where they have either reporting to an EVP or enrollment management director who is telling them to do certain things with students that apply. Certainly, the admissions officers are kind of the scapegoats here, but they're probably the ones that are least involved in the process. Other than they have to do the dirty work of actually physically admitting the student who clearly is not qualified. They do that with athletes all the time, and that was one of the methods and pathways for Division I students, certainly, that some of these institutions used to get students in the back door that wouldn't normally have been qualified. They put them on high-profile athletic teams where they could be placed in as a recruit in the system and then be assessed based on the lower standards that most institutions, Division I programs have for their student athletes, so as a way to get in. Now, is this despicable? Is this wrong? Is this clearly abuse of the system? Absolutely, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. What I think from an international education, an international admissions perspective, when you think about the kinds of scandals that are out there in international admission circles with fraudulent credentials, fraudulent documents, students cheating on exams, on the standardized test exams, having other people take the exams for them, on the all the exams that have been postponed for security concerns or documented that there have been cases of where these exams were accessed prior to that. So there's been these kinds of scandals for years in international admission circles, and certainly I think we in international admissions folks, exactly, Lou, you're right. It is nothing new for us. And in fact, we kind of chuckle when we hear some of this. And those of us who have been on domestic and international certainly can tell some stories on the international side that will make domestic admissions skin crawl in terms of how corrupt certain countries, certain practices are in certain countries that impact what we do. And we're all impacted by this in one way or another with friends or colleagues in the international admission circles. They may be on both sides of this, both domestic and international. But there is always been, I think, much greater levels of corruption internationally when it comes to getting admitted to institutions. And it's still going on to this day. We know I've reviewed applications when I was doing application reading for an institution a few years ago that we got a cohort of 10 applications from the same school in China and from the same international school in China. It wasn't like a CIS member school, but a Chinese national school that branded itself the international section of a Chinese national school. That it was clear an agent had compiled the files for these students. The transcripts were almost identical, like one grade off in each particular one. The essays were clearly written by the same person on multiple different. There were two or three occasions where an essay was the same for three different students. So this is not an unusual thing. The fraud that happens in international admissions is a big deal. So we certainly are, and Lou, you hit the nail on the head there. They are oftentimes business decisions, not admissions outcomes. So, and that's what I think this scandal certainly is going to be with us for a while. It's high profile because there are Hollywood actresses involved and selective institutions, Ivy Leagues involved. So very, very troubling, obviously, but as far as from the international admissions perspective, it's nothing new. And we'll talk more about that in next week's edition. But I do want to say thank you to those of you who are watching online live or going to be catching me on the podcast. It's always always good to hear your feedback. I actually heard from someone who watches on YouTube or on the replays on this on Facebook. And I want to say thank you to those of you, the silent majority out there, hopefully, that are watching these episodes, but not commenting. Thank you, though. Glad you're out there and glad I'm able to contribute something to your what you know about international education, where it might pop a new idea in your head every once in a while. So good luck to all of you, and looking forward to speaking with you all in the weeks and months to come. And I'm popping up the link to the SMIE Consulting website, smieconsulting.org, and the link will take you to the subscription page if you want to sign up for the newsletter or catch any of the archived editions of past midweek roundups or newsletters. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Cheers.